Hi, everybody, and welcome to the OMR Podcast International, where we like to go inside the minds of the biggest names in digital and tech. My name is Scott Peterson, digital marketing editor at OMR, and I am excited about today's pod because we are going straight into one of the internet's biggest hype areas du jour, Pokemon cards. You think I'm kidding? Not kidding. If you fire up the old YouTube machine and search for TCG, trading card games, and unboxing, or some combination thereof, you will find all sorts of videos with a ridiculously high number of views. Also, there is the famous Black Lotus card from Magic the Gathering, which you can have for about 40,000 US, a card that costs $40,000. Like I said, I'm not kidding. My guests today, Marco Schädlich and Yamin Kauf from Card Market, know all there is to know about the Black Lotus and everything else on the TCG scene, as Card Market is Europe's largest resale platform for trading card games. Card Market has over 1 million items for sale on its platform right now, and with 500,000 users from 30 countries, Card Market is a fascinating case study in community building and target group segmentation. So, without further ado, I'll let Marco and Yamin give you the lowdown on how Card Market went from niche passion project to big-time international player. That's right now in the OMR podcast. So I'm pleased to be joined by Card Market CEO Marco Schädlich and social media manager at Card Market, Yamin Kauf. Guys, thanks for coming on. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for the
invitation. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm very excited to have you guys on. I mentioned it a little bit at the top in the intro, but maybe a good place to start is also a place where we can provide a little added context to the listeners, is what exactly it is that Card Market does. So hear it straight from you guys, maybe the TLDR version for Card Market.
Yeah, it's basically we are an online marketplace for trading card games and accessories. Which just means that if you are interested in buying trading cards, you are more than welcome and can easily find probably the largest offer in Europe. And if you are having trading cards and you want to sell them, then yeah, please also join Card Market. And you have the ability to sell your cards to a large audience. And yeah, basically it works similar to eBay. You have buyer and seller, and we are basically bringing them together and make sure that they have all the information that are necessary to make good trades.
Okay, so it's a resale platform, a resale marketplace for trading cards primarily, correct? Okay, and then you also, in addition, you do some events, the Card Market series, when live events, of course, are permitted.
Yes, we do a lot of community work, and one of them is that we also having events if there's not a corona pandemic going on.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Well, Marco, I think I'd like to start with you. What's your background? How did you get to Card Market?
My background is basically I'm a have a PhD in business administration, so I'm basically bringing the typical management skills with me with a business administration study. I worked a long time for a consulting company and basically also had the plan to become an entrepreneur. And basically with Card Market, I had the chance together with my two partners, Luis and Matthias, to realize this. I basically joined the company basically built it up then from there to a quite stable company as it is now.
I would say so. Did you have any experience with TCGs, trading card games, before you joined?
As I was a kid, obviously, I was also in contact with TCGs, but I was not so deeply involved as my partners have been or some other people, maybe, I'm really more like the business guy than less the TCG guy.
Okay. Yamin, similar question for you. How did you end up getting a Card Market? You have a little bit more experience to the gaming side of things, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, exactly. Like I've been a long time TCG player, basically my entire life, because I really enjoyed them as a kid. So I just kept them as a hobby. Mm-hmm. So I was, at first I was a customer of Card Market, right? I signed up as a user and I used the platform a bunch.
Okay.
before starting to the very first thing I did for CartMarket ever was writing articles for our blog, which is called CartMarket Insight, which, like, you know, just tries to cover the most recent, like, news and stuff actually related to the games themselves. So I wrote some articles there, and then one day CartMarket opened up an internship for marketing purposes, and I applied, and I think my, like, the skills I picked up when, like, being in the, like, TCG community really, like, helped convince,
sure,
for, like, example, Marco of hiring me.
Yeah, very much. I mean, you have the expertise, I guess, coming and being one of the community to, quote unquote, make it big, to join the company. I imagine that was a huge benefit to your profile. So you said you were a professional player, or you played competitively. Which games did you play?
I mainly played Magic the Gathering, which is also the largest game that's currently, like, on CartMarket. It's got by far, like, the largest user base. And so I wouldn't call myself a pro player in there, but I did, like, play professionally for quite a bit and, like, made some money off of tournaments and stuff. And by doing that, you obviously, like, when you devote so much time to a hobby, you obviously, like, get deep into the community and, like, meet interesting people and know what the people, like, talk about and what they think about and how they think.
He joined a pro tour, and also he had some really great wins and successful times, or he's really modest here. But
okay, so he's the Michael Jordan of CartMarket, is what you're trying to tell me. Something along those lines. Or the Ronaldo, whatever.
I mean, yes, I would, like, if you want to, like, put numbers on it or something, I would say I definitely, like, achieved something that only maybe the top 0.5% of players achieve.
There you go. That's pretty good company to keep. That's not bad at all. We'll get back to a little bit more, like, the gaming side of things here in a little bit later. I wanted to kind of pivot back a little bit more towards the business and kind of just for a little bit more context, like, some of some facts and figures about the CartMarket, the platform. How many users do you guys have registered on the platform at the moment?
It's quite a lot. I mean, we officially state 500,000, but the number of accounts is higher. But as with many websites, if you have an account, it doesn't mean that it is active. But yeah, we have a good active user base, and I think a lot of also dead accounts. But when I subtract them, so we are, I think, at 500,000, that's a good number.
Okay, and how many people does CartMarket employ?
We at the moment are roughly at 50 people. I mean, the structure of the workflow is often supported by freelancers, so we're also having a lot of community-based guys that writing, as Yamin said, like, for instance, freelancers writing articles for us, or doing videos, or doing a lot of other smaller things that where it's not necessary to having a full-time employee at CartMarket. So the number of people that we're working is probably would double the number of employees.
Sure. And you guys are based in Berlin, but if I'm not mistaken, you're Europe's the largest resale platform for TCGs in Europe, correct?
Yeah, we are often known as the reference marketplace. So basically people coming and checking the price of a car, because we have a lot of offers, we have a lot of demand, and so basically then it's economical system that works quite well, that gives then you the best price, or that's the fair price. And yeah, and at the moment, there are a lot of competitors in the US, but here in Europe, we are quite dominant.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, like, what Marcos said is not to be undervalued, like what he said about being a reference. Obviously trading is a large part of trading card games. And if you go to, like, any, shop or like meet any other players in those TCGs and you want to make a trade, mm-hmm. they will like check Card Market to see what the current price is. And if you like suggest a price and people will call you out on it based on the stats on Card Market, just like recent sales prices and so on. Like,
oh, okay, so it's really it's a reference guide for people even away from you guys. So it's an
for offline trades.
Yeah,
like players will often quote Card Market prices simply because they are so efficient, as Marco said, because it's not quite an efficient market, but it is mm-hmm. like. It has such a high volume that the offers and the offer and the demand produces quite an accurate price most of the time.
Okay, you just mentioned volume. How many cards are currently up for sale on the platform, roughly?
I mean, it depends a little bit how it's structured, if you want to have the number of articles or if you want to have really the numbers of offers. But let's put the numbers of offers, which means like whatever, Yamin has a offer, I have an offer, you have an offer, then basically then you have mm-hmm. three cards, that but it's still the same card. So we are roughly at 100 million different cards you could basically buy. It's not all cards, but let's say products.
But okay. Yeah, if you were to order every single thing that's available on Card Market, you would end up with 100 million things in your mailbox.
Okay, got it. Fair enough. And so, which markets are your primary markets where you're focusing at? It's just Europe, correct?
Yes. So, from a regional perspective, we are dedicated to Europe, which is already a huge challenge because, I mean, we are talking about 30 countries, so we're having the EU. Great Britain, Switzerland, and Norway. Mm-hmm. And so we're dealing with, I think, 28 languages, 13 different rules and regulations. At the moment, we're offering at Card Market 5 different languages. So every post, every communication is always translated in 4 additional languages. So this is quite challenging in the ordinary process, as you can imagine. Obviously, English is our main language in a way that we also having internally speaking because we're working mm-hmm. with an international team. The entire concept to being in Europe is, for instance, too challenging for our US competitive because they have it. There is easier for them. They have one regulation, one law, one language in the US. So they're often looking over to Europe, but then basically step back and say, okay, maybe this is too much for us.
Leave it to you guys. But so you said there are 5 main languages, so English, German, Spanish, French, and Italian?
Yes.
Okay, score. What are the differences in regulations? I just kind of figured naively, apparently, that there'd be one kind of blanket regulation for commerce in the EU, but that apparently is not.
Yes and no. Of course, the EU helped a lot with standardizing certain things like shipments or whatever, some VAT rules or these things. But at the same time, you're having a lot of national laws and rules that are still taking place, and also in every country the shipment methods differ. In every country there are some different VATs that you need mm-hmm. to collect. If I would go into detail, we could find a long list of things that differentiate and where we basically deal every day with, which makes sometimes our own support really challenging, but obviously we try to find a clear rules that fits for every country.
Sure. But so is it fair to say that Germany or the DAC region, so Germany, Austria, and Switzerland is the largest market, the most significant market?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. And how much traffic are we talking about for Card Market, roughly speaking, in a month or annually? How many impressions would you say, or sales?
We're talking about, it depends a little bit on the season because over the year you're having, especially when there's new expansions coming out in the expansion season, but then also, for instance, before Christmas, we are not having a lot of sales because people are more using their monitor, their share of wallet to for other products. But it can be in a good month up to 10 million sessions.
Okay, that's not bad. I wanted to get your take and your opinion on the kind of Pokemon hype that's been going on. So as far as I could tell, it was last October where one of the Pauls, I think it was Logan or maybe, yeah, it was Logan who live streamed an unboxing of a box of Pokemon cards that he got for $200,000. And then I saw that there's a couple other guys on YouTube that just do similar things. It's like professionally graded boxes of cards or unopened boxes of cards and then getting them professionally graded and all this stuff, but doing this a lot of the stuff in just live streaming it. And that just seemed, from my perspective as somebody who's not really familiar with the scene at all, that it had to have had a huge boost, at least in awareness. Did you guys notice any uptick?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was incredible. Maybe can give you more details about it. But we felt it, especially starting in January. It basically, Europe is always a little bit late in certain things. But then the hype started, and the first quarter of this year was insane. Also, on number of Pokemon sales, but also on how many people putting offers live and
probably traffic to the Instagram channels, correct?
Yeah, we saw that increase not only on the website itself, but also on our social media channels. You know, every day, like you have a bunch of new followers, half of which are new YouTube channels that are trying to replicate what Logan Paul, I think it was, did. You know, trying to replicate that, and then, you know, getting into that community. But Magic the Gathering was and probably will be our biggest game for quite a while, followed by Yu-Gi-Oh, and then Pokemon always ranked in third, but with the new hype, like that might change or has already changed.
Just from a collector's a volume of cards on the platform, or like sales for the game, or actually with professional players?
The topic of players versus collectors is another one.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I'm saying. It might have already changed, or it might change, because depending on the indicator that you use, you can obviously get different results, right? Like you can tweak any statistics so that you get the result you want, right? But as for Pokemon, the whole hype obviously got a lot of eyes on the cards, and also sparked a huge demand in a sealed product, since a lot of people want to replicate what Logan Paul did, right? And they want to be just like that and open packs on camera. The demand really spiked in sealed product, but obviously the single cards also.
I mean, if you're lucky enough to pull one of the really, really valuable ones, then you might as well try to get your money for it. I wanted to add, you'd kind of alluded to it, that there's a huge difference between collectors and players. How would you describe a typical card market user, your target group?
That's a hard question, because I think because the difference between players and collectors is so huge, and you will always be on a spectrum on both of these axes, right? You will almost never meet someone who is purely a professional player and doesn't see any value in collecting these cards. Collectors often have their incentive to collecting, they get that from childhood memories and stuff like that, right? It's like that with everything that you collect. Why else would you collect? I don't know what else. Collect, there's always some emotional value attached to these things, whereas players basically only need the cards to compete in tournaments, right?
They see the utility of it.
Exactly. And so the typical card market user is always on a spectrum on both of these angles, I would say.
Sure.
And then if I would have to make a statement about that, I would say that collecting is the larger focus overall, but this heavily varies from game to game too.
Okay.
For example, Yu-Gi-Oh is much more gameplay focused compared to Pokemon.
So what you have is basically there are like three things that is dedicated to trading card games. Like you have the trading component, you have the collecting component, and you have the playing component. And there are people there that basically filling in all of these three components, and some mm-hmm. of them just focusing on gaming and on one of them, or only collecting. Or some of them are just, you know, then the professional. They are more only on trading. So it's it's a solid mix of all of them. Obviously, between the games, there are differences, and there's especially the current hype of Pokemon is triggered by the trading and the collecting scene, because people see trading cards also as kind of investment object, which it's true mm-hmm. in a certain way. I mean, especially if you hold them longer, or if you're drawing a good or expensive card, there's a decent chance that you can make money with it. And especially if you're patient and having some time, then often the value increase, especially when the quality of the card remains stable, so like near mint, mm-hmm. then there's a good chance that you can make some money with it. And especially nowadays, as there are negative interests in the financial markets, people mm-hmm. looking for opportunities to invest in something. And indeed, TCGs has trading cards have become an investment object, especially in Pokemon.
Have you seen a lot of professional investors get on board?
I mean, I think it's nothing where you say, okay, there's like a big investment doing, but it's like more an add-on to your portfolio, I would say.
Okay.
Also, the volume of people investing is obviously very low, because you don't want your investment to be, let's say, 100 cards valued at 10 euros each, because finding a seller for 100 cards is much harder than finding a seller for a single highly valued object. Obviously, this is simplifying it a lot, sure. But I think you get the gist of it, right?
Absolutely, yeah, totally. So I wanted to, while we're on the topic of like rare and valuable cards, like what makes a card so valuable? Is it like the artwork? Is it the absolute rarity? Is it its use in games? Is it just something you can't really define?
In short, it depends.
Yeah.
As always, in every topic you get deep into, the answer is always, it depends. Now, it's mostly a combination of all the factors you just mentioned. For players, obviously, a huge quick difference in price gets made when a card suddenly becomes viable for tournaments or needed for tournaments, right? Mm-hmm. Like if nobody saw this card X being good in tournaments, and then suddenly it is very good, it turns out to be great, and everybody needs one copy of it or four copies of it or whatever.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it rises in price because demand has just risen.
So just like the copycats for in the games, they see like the like, okay, I can win some tournaments with this, and then everybody wants one, and so
exactly.
That drives the price up.
That,
okay,
and
so
that,
demand
that happens a lot now during the past year, a bit less because there simply are no tournaments, right?
Sure.
Like no physical tournaments, but that's basically the highest volatility you will see in card prices short term,
mm-hmm.
and then for collectors, a large portion of how attractive a card is or how like valuable it is comes from the rarity, of course, because when demand is low, prices will be higher.
Mm-hmm.
And then also a certain want in the community for certain characters. So for example, Charizard is a Pokemon that will
right.
always, like a Charizard card will inherently always have a higher value than any other Pokemon, even at the same rarity, simply because demand is higher due to like artificial emotional value, right?
Okay.
It always comes down to how much emotional value does the general user or the average user attach with this card, and then how much do they want it, right? In the end, you can always narrow it down to supply and demand. And with these cardboard pieces that don't have any inherent value. It's all emotional value.
Yeah, it's all the stuff that we basically attach to it. But so like with I mean, Charizard, I get it. I mean, it's at least a little bit like it's kind of, you know, cute and very unique as a character. Like maybe it's not personally my thing, but I can understand the appeal of finding that lizard pretty damn cool, like regardless of the utility. But if I'm not mistaken, the most expensive card, like regardless of the game, is that the Black Lotus from Magic the Gathering?
Expensive card. So the most expensive cards tend to be some weird promo that was maybe printed once at a convention. But leaving those out of the mix, because I think okay. That's just unfair, because yeah, if there's one of a kind, like for example, the creator of Magic the Gathering, Richard Garfield, once created, I think, two cards each or something for his engagement to his now wife.
Okay. And those things are just off the wall, crazy expensive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's like four of them.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what are you going to do about those prices? Anyways, for like regular cards, yeah, Black Lotus is probably leading the pack there. Like on Card Market right now, if you want one from the very first edition, which is called Alpha, you can get the first one currently listed at 40,000 euros. So 40,000 euros for Black Lotus that's really beat up. Like I'm not sure if there's a scan attached to it, but
okay.
Yeah, there actually is, but a really beat up one. And then if you want it in a good condition, you have to pay like upwards of 100,000 euros.
And did that come also just from scarcity, from the fact that it was so rare, or is there like some type of other use or factor? Was like there an artist who was involved with it?
So the emotional value attached there. The utility on this card is very low. Let's start out with
okay,
that one.
Yeah.
There's especially for the very first edition of a card, you don't have to get the first edition of that card from Alpha. There's also Beta and Unlimited. So you don't need to get the Alpha version of Black Lotus. So utility is very low. And the emotional value comes from the fact that the card is and was very, very powerful within the game. It belongs to a set of cards that's called the Power 9, which were the nine most powerful cards back okay. from the very beginning of Magic, when the creators of the game didn't quite know how to balance these cards. So these were just blatantly overpowered, and for that reason, it kind of has additional emotional value and has like attained that.
Okay, I gotcha. Fame. So it had, yeah, exactly. It has a fame through longevity and history and this kind of like lore about it, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. There's tons of resources online. If you just like type Black Lotus into any search engine you want, you'll find a lot of resources on why that card is like so expensive and why the whole history of the card, basically.
Okay, well, I appreciate that little kind of history lesson there. But speaking of history, I wanted to get back to the genesis of Card Market, the kind of founder's legend, if you will. My understanding is that one of your co-founders started it about, or had an epiphany sometime in the mid-aughts, around 2007, 2008. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. So my co-founder, so basically we have only one founder, if you want to put it like that. Mm-hmm. That's Luis. Luis basically came up with the idea 2007. At this time, there was basically the internet was still new. There were not many websites out that offered any unique service. So even Amazon was small. eBay was at this time a little bit bigger, but still small. And yeah, at this time, they basically came up with the idea to creating a marketplace that is dedicated to trading card games, which basically makes the difference to eBay, or make a big difference to eBay at this time.
Okay, but when Luis founded it, it was more of an online shop and not so much of a resale platform, correct?
No, it was always a marketplace, and it was. But as it always with a marketplace, you need to bring offers to the market and then find obviously buyers. And there were a few, let's say, connections that he used, and pretty quick he also gained my second partner Matthias then for this project in 2008, and basically Luis coded the entire marketplace by himself, sitting at his bed, and basically we even had our own company that was only dedicated for trading. So it was Karmacrow. And we basically, organized our own offers so that people could also buy something from Louis and Matthias at this time. And because you need kind of starting to having the flow on the marketplace, and this means you need initial offers, and that's what basically what happened. So you can imagine that they're sitting both on a bed, one is programming on a computer and the other one is basically collecting the cards and you know, separating it into packaging. And the first years, I think that was maybe I'm not the best person to tell the stories here, but I heard a lot of stories about this, and it was really, as you can imagine from other legend stories, that is really pure from home, no money, really only coded by themselves, and did everything
on,
and we're running
bankruptcy
on a fair and with nothing and just kind of shouting out that there's a new marketplace there. And and over time, that's the cool thing with the TCG community and in general, is that there's a lot of interaction, so people discussing things, finding out, are curious to see new things. And that's basically, they made the first 5 years no marketing at all. So basically, it was all driven by
word of mouth.
Yeah, word of mouth. And so obviously, the growth was not insane or not compared to any other company that has a financial investor in the back end that putting money on the company. But the good thing is then after a while, when you're getting the growth and you're starting then also with a little bit marketing here and there, then it's basically running from a loan. And since 2007, we have an organic growth, which is stable and really also impressive in my opinion, because I mean, existing now for 14 years, this is probably not many companies can say this.
No, absolutely not. Not in today's space.
To me, that founding story is always like the classical hero's tale, right? Like this like small startup that overcomes all the, like the huge barrier to like establishing itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I mean, you just basically turn like a passion and a hobby into a profession that's actually viable, but without losing like a lot of that core ethos of like what the reason like that Luis got into it to begin with. From what I hear, you know, you're just sitting on your bed, you're programming, you're doing what you love, and you're sending out cards that you are individually hand packing.
Exactly.
But what would interest me is, when would you say was the time that, so from the time it was founded in 2007, 2008, but how long did it take for you, for Card Market, to kind of be known as an authority, a trusted source for prices for cards?
I mean, it was probably after 5-6 years, we basically also changed the entire market. I mean, you have to imagine that in 2007, there were catalogs sent to people at home, and they were having a physical catalog and basically having the cards in there, and then making filled in some forms and send it somewhere, and then later they got back the cards that they requested, and you had just eBay where you had randomly cards on it, but nothing was really structured. So basically, Card Market brought up a lot of value to the player base and the community by having a structured way of listing, but also buying these cards. And then when you have a significant user base and enough offers and enough demand, and you also becoming then a reference in the price. And I guess this happens then after 5-6 years. I mean, it's hard to say, because in the first years we are dedicated to Magic Germany. Then we basically opened up the market to Europe. Then we added Yu-Gi-Oh! in 2012, and then we kind of professionalized later on. Then also by syndicating everything into Card Market. Before it was Magic Carton Market or Magic Card Market, so we had a dedicated marketplace only for one game. In 2015, we introduced Pokemon to Pokemon Card Market. Basically, it was our third game, or no, fourth game. We had already World of Warcraft TCG, but this died in 2012. So, but it's okay. Still a source of sales. I mean, there are still people that are trading this. So that's the cool thing with the secondary market, that people still having these cards and still trading this, and you have a stable, really stable turnover even with dead games. So yeah, and in 2016 we all basically migrated everything to cardmarket.com. We purchased the domain, and since then I think we basically established us as the main player in Europe with one brand and a lot of TCGs. And nowadays we offering all important TCGs, which I think we have 12 at the moment. And yeah, we are now the reference here.
Okay, and so you mentioned the trend, so in 2015, 2016, you completely consolidated all of these separate resale platforms so that you just had one resale platform regardless of the card game. While that's the trend on the resale platform, social media, it's a completely different game. Everything is separated by game, so at least on your Instagram channel, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, maybe, I mean, can you say something more? But even on the website, we have it separated by game. So if you're landing at cardmarket.com, you basically have to choose a game, and then you're coming to the real landing page of the game. A Magic player might not even know about the Pokemon or the Yu-Gi-Oh! Subpage because he will only be at the Magic.
Okay.
Yeah, and as for social media, like we know our role in the for our users, right? Like we are not the thing they are excited about. They are excited about the games. And so if you're a Pokemon player or a Pokemon collector and you log onto social media, you don't want to see the card price change that a Magic card has just undergone or something. So to us, it's important to, you know, show the users what they want to see and
maximize relevance for them, so to speak. Exactly.
It is a lot of effort to do that, but to us, it's definitely worth it because the whole thing is based on a community. So if we can do that for a community, then that's definitely worth it.
Okay. How many followers do you think you have across all your Instagram channels or your social media channels, I should say?
So on Instagram specifically, we currently sit at a combined like 45,000. Twitter, that's around 20,000. And on Facebook, it's 85,000. When I checked most recently. So what does that make? 150,000, roughly?
Roughly thereabouts, yeah.
Obviously, there's some, like, you can't just take these numbers for granted because there are people that follow multiple channels and stuff.
Right, that, yeah.
Obviously, even just within one game, someone can follow Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and then suddenly they would be counted in three times there. So don't take these numbers just as they are, but like as a reference, maybe.
Is there a lot of overlap, would you say, between games? Because the way you made it sound is like if you're a collector, maybe not so much if you're a collector, but at least if you're a player, you tend to focus on one game.
Exactly. I think for the most part that is true. Even for the other, let's say maybe 5% that do follow another game too. Those are more dominant in Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh! And Dragon Ball. Like Magic really has like kind of its own fan base. It's like the largest game of the three, but Magic players don't tend to meddle with other games at the same time. Whereas especially for like the other three games all have one thing in common, and that's that they are based on characters from somewhere else, right?
Yeah.
The Pokemon TCG was built on the Pokemon game, right? The original one for, you know, your Game Boy. Yu-Gi-Oh! has this whole anime following, you know, that's based on the card game. And then Dragon Ball, yeah, obviously that whole thing is also based on an anime. So the follower, there's a lot more overlap there in these games simply because followers of one anime often tend to follow the other animes as well.
Sure. I guess that makes sense. I never really even thought of it that way, that the other three just exist in an outside IP or cosmos,
yeah, exactly,
to the game and to the collectible aspect. That's a very good point.
That also drives like the huge focus on collecting, or the bigger focus on collecting in these games.
Probably reach different audiences too that normally wouldn't be involved.
Yep.
Yeah. So you mentioned the channels that you're primarily on: Facebook, Twitter, and then Instagram, obviously. Twitch and YouTube, you guys are active as well, correct?
Yep. We use Twitch mainly for broadcasting our tournaments, which we touched on earlier, but that are currently not happening. At the moment, we're also dipping our toes into other types of content on Twitch. And then YouTube used to be this big archive for the tournament replays, which were very popular because players love watching tournaments. Mm-hmm. And now we're like for the past year or a bit more, we have also like started going into other kinds of content on there. As Marco mentioned, some freelancers create videos for us that, you know, just try to be entertaining or helpful to the community.
And that's just all community outreach to kind of, you know, retain and just take care of and interact with your community, especially when you're not able to see them in person, correct?
Yeah, exactly. We have this huge advantage, like Marco said, that our marketing is like easily done via word of mouth simply because we are a reference. So all like we get to do this. This is not something where we like we're forced into or something. We get to just have fun with our community basically because they will continue to use us. So we get to interact with them and we want to interact with them. Whereas other companies often have to focus on like, how can I connect this social media post to generating sales or like getting click through to my product? We can just say, hey, you know what's going on in the TCG market? This is currently happening. This is actually like relevant to you. And then if you decide to check it out, you will go to Card Market anyways, simply because we are so focused on TCGs and we are the reference.
Right. And you have essentially the product is built in the marketing, or vice versa. It's there. You don't really have to invent it. And I saw like on Instagram primarily, at least you have like a few different types of posts. You have like giveaways, you have featured cards, like maybe like a new pricing trend. You have announcements, obviously, and then also strategy posts for like ways of using different cards, if I'm not mistaken. Is there a certain type of post, maybe per game, or just generally speaking, that has the most resonance with the most traction with a community?
The ones that often generate the most interaction are often controversies within the game. Like maybe if a certain topic is not well received by the community, let's say maybe there is a card that is way too powerful, or maybe a decision within the game, or like those kind of controversies often
kind of like hate baiting.
Yeah, exactly. But that, we don't try to force that, because that to us just isn't.
Yeah, you don't want to necessarily get everybody up in arms, but you know, if it gets people's attention, that's good too.
Exactly, but
especially if it's topical.
We just want to basically let our users know what's going on, especially with price trends, because that is also what they use Card Market for, right? We're the reference, so we will also let you know if there is something that is rapidly changing that you should know about too.
Okay. And are there huge differences in response to certain posts or content pieces depending on the community? Yeah? Could you tell me about some differences?
As we mentioned earlier, the different games have different audiences. For example, as I also mentioned, Yu-Gi-Oh! Is much more gameplay focused. So, for example, we don't run certain posts as often there. For mm-hmm. example, for Magic the Gathering, we sometimes post about altered art, which is when an artist retouches the artwork of a card and like sells mm-hmm. that on Card Market. We don't do that for Yu-Gi-Oh! Simply because it's not so much about the audience doesn't care that much about that kind of content. It's much more gameplay focused. So, but for example, a post about changes to gameplay that are upcoming, like if Konami, the publisher of Yu-Gi-Oh, if they ban or restrict a certain game card for gameplay, then we will for sure make a post about that, because that's what's relevant to our community. And then obviously, yeah, the responses also vary in there. At the same time, you have to keep in mind that your audience is not the same user 60,000 times or whatever, how many followers you have on the platform. Your audience is sprinkled all over the place. Some are collectors, some are players, and even within the players, there are sub communities for different types of gameplay. I don't need to get into the specifics here, but just we have to keep that in mind when posting too, and cater posts towards these different audiences, because we don't want to leave anyone behind, and we don't want to turn into this mess of like boring, samey content. So if you look into, for example, the strategy guides that we post on our blog and then also on social media, you will find these are often aimed at very different audiences, and then get different responses and different responses based on the size of that audience.
Okay, that makes sense. I wanted to ask you about the tournaments that you mentioned, the strategy guides and stuff, which obviously then focuses a lot on the gameplay, or only on the gameplay. But these events, the Card Market series, it's a fascinating competition, in that it's the premier tournament in all of Europe. Is that correct? I mean, depending on the game.
Yeah. So basically, the general concept of the Card Market series is that we having six stops all over Europe all over the year. And so basically every 2 months. The last event that took place was in January 2020, before Corona, in Paris. We basically then renting a big hall with 3,000 square meter, and then we offering all important and even unimportant training games to the user base, and basically everyone can come join. You have to register, and basically can then win prizes. Usually this goes over from Friday to Sunday, so 3 days, and and have different format by game, so it's very specific. And yeah, and people love this because they even traveling across Europe, coming from different countries, is quite interesting. I mean, you have obviously the most people come from, if you're in Paris, and they come from France, but there are a lot of people coming also from Spain, Germany, or whatever, just to meet up. There's a really people are really excited about these events, because it's not only about playing, it's also about socializing, it's about getting in touch with new people, meeting up. Maybe we have own some vendors that maybe buying some things that you might not buy in your local store, and also just experience some exciting tournaments on site. It's a big difference to the online thing that at the moment is dominant, because it's a different feeling. I mean, you can probably compare it with online poker and real poker, because there's like these, if you're seeing your opponent and feeling how he's feel, then it's a different thing than when you're just having a screen in front of you and just seeing how he reacts. And then there are some people coming to win this thing, so especially the professional, but many people just coming for the feeling.
So it's not only just the card games themselves, but there's also vendors going on. So kind of like a little trade fair feeling vibe going on. And do you have like strategy workshops or things like that, or like, I don't know, celebrity players or other things of that nature that are going
on? Exactly. So the idea is that we even in the future want to become a bit more like not a Comic Con, a TCG Con. So basically really being a place for everyone that want to play, that maybe collectors that having chance to make their deals, and also bringing together all the professionals and maybe have some workshops, and especially these things helping a lot, because again, it's a community driven market, and if everyone in the market does well, then card market does well. So we have an interest in also giving something back to the community, and I think obviously it's also has a marketing purpose behind it, and we're paying a lot on top to organizing these events because it's a lot of work. And we don't earn any money on this, but it's fine because it brings us a lot of value back in other ways.
How many people attend the events, would you say, roughly speaking?
It depends a little bit on the location, and because in some countries there are more players than in others, but I can give you the last numbers. I think we were over the weekend 3,000 registered players. So I mean, you on a Saturday, the hall can be filled with 1,500 people, which I find quite a lot, because you have to imagine that everyone is sitting on a table, like having an opponent on the other side of the table and then playing. And sometimes there's when everyone in the hall is playing, you hear everything. So there's such a noise you can't imagine. And when the round is over, it's so loud, it's so noisy. It's a really special feeling.
As somebody who works for a company that has gotten their start in live events, I know exactly what you mean. Like just getting into that, the feeling of being in a hall with all sorts of people, just the echoes and everything. It's got a really special vibe to it. Hopefully we get back there one of these days.
But hopefully.
Corona has obviously put a nix on the majority of live events. But it would seem that that might be kind of a silver lining for card market, since people are not able to go out as much, meaning that they're staying at home a little bit more. Maybe they have a little bit more time to, get into the collecting aspect of it, or maybe people that have been out of the game are coming back to it, just as a couple of examples. But have you seen, you've obviously had an impact from Corona, but just curious, has it been more positive or has it been more of a taxing, very difficult situation for you guys?
Corona started in March last year, and the first 2 months we saw a big decline because I think people hesitated to invest any money or to trade, and because everyone was unsure about the situation, how it goes on. But then we basically also benefit, as Amazon or other online marketplaces did, from trading at home is more safe instead of going to your local trading card shop. You basically ordered it online. So then we had a really good growth, and then pushed then with the Pokemon hype as well. This was definitely a good last year for us. At the end, so we are more on the winning side of Corona than a real loser. But obviously, the way how things are handled changed a little bit, as you said. People probably got more collectors and less players now to the market, because just as there's no chance to playing at the moment, if you're not playing at your kitchen table with your family or friends. It changed a little bit the way how people used card market, but in general it was positive for us.
Okay. And I imagine trying to translate or relocate the tournaments to a digital space is not really viable right now. Is that correct?
The thing is that the producers of the games obviously have a huge interest of to getting into esports, and they're investing a lot of money. So there's an online version of the game for almost every TCG, and especially for Magic the Gathering, they're having the MTG Arena. And you basically can register there and play and having your online cards there and buy these online cards. And this is really interesting for the producer, because he doesn't need to produce a real card. He just needs to program this. So as we are a pure marketplace for real trading card, it's not in our direct interest to basically hype the online version, as we also think that's not really the way how trading cards are originated. I mean, the original fun is from sitting together with your friends and, you know, discussing, and then you seeing what the other guy does, and so especially then on real tournaments, but also at the kitchen. So we're missing the social impact on the online or esport game. But there was a big big trend in the esport, especially the first month. But after a while, then we had the feedback that people get not bored, but you know, get saturated with the online game, and we're basically longed for sitting again on a real base and playing TCG. So we obviously supporting real TCG gameplay in any matters, and we have a lot of partnerships and have supported a lot of tournaments, but also players and sponsored a lot of the community. But we are not so in favor of the supporting the esport, as this is not directly valuable for our business.
Fair enough. It makes total sense. Where do you guys see Card Market going from here? What does the future hold for you guys?
Yeah, we definitely want to become, the vision, let's put it this way. The vision is that we're becoming the dominant trading card marketplace in the world for all important trading card games. This is something that is on our agenda, but this is really a long-term goal. Nevertheless, we have a platform or a marketplace which is really unique in the way that is for a specific type of product as trading card games that you can basically retrade again. There are also other products that could be used for miniatures. There are a lot of other collectible products where you could be interesting. There's also board games, which are not so much in the secondary market, but they're also sometimes reused. So there are a few product types that fit into this marketplace that we have. So, which means like, there are also strategies, which basically targeted on a nerd marketplace where you say, okay, you're having a lot of big user base that is into gameplay in general, which means like they love not only trading games, they loving role games, they loving board games, and why not offering them these kind of products as well, as you have already these buyer base, and at the same time you're having the sellers, because many of our professional sellers in online in on-site stores in your city. And they are not only offering in their shop trading cards, they're obviously offering also all other types of gameplay. So this is definitely something where we're also looking into.
All right. And but most of those products are all in the analog space, I would say. There's one topic that is all the rage, and I'm pretty sure that you guys know a thing or two about NFTs, the collectibles that are going on that are just taking over the world, quote unquote. Maybe it's a hype that is just passing. But if I'm not mistaken, there's at least one kind of similar, TCG is the wrong term, but like a similar vein of game, Monsters Unchained, I think, with these NFT-based collectibles. Do you guys foresee any trend towards that space or that becoming relevant for you guys?
There's our entire infrastructure is like aimed, like the Card Market is specialized so much in trading card games that I think these don't fall into
not
fit for the platform, because
sure.
And there are also already like other platforms that are specifically built for NFT marketplaces, right? Because that's also the thing I think describes Card Market the best. That we're so focused on one niche, which is physical trading card games in this case, because that's what separates us from eBay or from any other way of buying your cards, right? We have a support team that knows everything about these physical cards, and we have a database that is structured to reflect card condition, card language, all of that. So I think, at least currently, with the amount of hype that NFTs are having, it's just not the platform. Restructuring the platform in a way that fits NFTs is simply nothing that should be a high priority at the levels that we're at.
Okay. What about something like maybe grading cards? something like authenticating or verifying a card's authenticity, something like that? Or is that also not really, you don't see any relevance for Card Market at the time?
Currently, we already, obviously that's always an issue when you operate on collectibles, right? Like counterfeits and stuff. And our users are extremely good already at educated, I would say, on these topics. And we, on the regular, we receive support tickets that say something like, hey, this in this order, there was a counterfeit card. And in those cases, we already have them send the cards to us for us to verify those cards or to check those cards. Because once again, our marketplace is completely community driven. And so we are really in favor of educating our users and in making sure that everyone in the community behaves nicely with each other. And so, yeah, spotting counterfeits and going against those and preventing those issues from occurring has to be on our agenda already. Our support's already on top of that. And that's one of the benefits of being a hyper zoomed in market only on TCG.
All right. Well, guys, thank you so much for your time. That's all I have. Yamin Kauf, Marco Schädlich, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right, guys. Bye.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.